Welcome to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM, Vancouver's co-op radio, CFRO, broadcasting live in the downtown east side in unceded Coast Salish territories. Today is Friday, April 18th, 2014. I'm one of your hosts, Cynthia Ganatra, and I'm joined here today by my other hosts, Jackie.
Hello.
And Allison.
Hi there.
Alyssa, Jenny, and Tim are away today. Welcome everyone to the show. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And we're also available as a podcast online on our website. I'm really excited about today's show. It's Easter Bunnies and Earth Day show. So I hope everybody's having a great long weekend. We have two wonderful interviews. Our first is with Tracy Martin. Tracy is a rabbit rescuer and a House Rabbit Society educator who lives in Spokane, Washington, in the USA. In an effort to stem the flow of abandoned rabbits after Easter each year, she has created a yearly campaign called Rabbitron. It's such a cute name. It's actually named after a former rabbit, so we'll ask her about that when we interview her. The campaign consists of website, billboards, newspaper ads, and more. Tracy and her husband are vegan, and they share their home with a big family of rescued rabbits, dogs, cats, pigeons, and a couple of hens as well. So stay tuned for that interview in about 15 minutes. For a feature interview for Earth Day, we'll be speaking to Will Anderson, who is the author of the book This Is Hope, Green Vegans and the New Human Ecology. This Is Hope is a crossover book for self-identified environmentalists, species rights advocates, vegans, and those dedicated to true sustainability, also students of deep ecology, who want to know about the biocentric solutions for our dietary, consumer, and reproductive choices. Will Anderson has conducted campaigns on behalf of ecosystems and species rights for organizations over a span of three decades. And Will was a survival instructor in the Air Force and recorded and published humpback whale songs and co-founded Maine Animal Coalition and Greenpeace Alaska. These experiences and witnessing Earth's cultural diversity, often remote areas of the world, compelled him to research and write this book. He began Green Vegans, which is a nonprofit organization, in 2009. I look forward to speaking to him midway through the show. So if you've been listening to Co-op Radio, you know it is our spring membership drive. What this means is we're asking you, our listeners, to either purchase a membership or renew your membership. I don't know if you know, but all the producers and hosts of all the shows here on Co-op Radio are volunteer, including us here at Animal Voices. Co-op Radio is a non-commercial, cooperatively owned, which means we own listener-supported community radio station. And we're located, as I mentioned earlier, in the downtown east side. And we're the voice for the voiceless that strives to provide a space for underrepresented and marginalized communities. So this means we're membership-run. We're not promoted by any big companies. There's no commercials. There's only ads for our own shows, which are, like I mentioned, volunteer. So if you'd like to donate for Animal Voices, becoming a member, you can call 604-684-8494. That's 604-684-8494. Or online at cooperadio.org. That's cooperadio.org, and make a donation to become a member. So you just don't make a donation, you actually become part of the radio station. And you can do either a monthly donation, whatever you can afford, $5 a month as a sustainable member, or you can make a one-time donation for your yearly membership. And we here, I know the last show said they hit their targets, but we here at Animal Voices have not hit our targets. So we ask you to please call and become a member now. And we here at Animal Voices, we're not just a radio show. We also do other types of animal advocacy in the community, which we also do, which is all volunteer, including our Thanksgiving potluck and movie screenings. So speaking of movie screenings, we collaborated with Liberation BC, which is also a local group, to premiere the film Live and Let Live last Tuesday. We had the filmmaker, Mark Purcell, there, who did a Q&A after the film. It was a great event. It was very well attended. I think we had over 120 people come, all different from all different walks of life from all over Vancouver. It wasn't just vegan, so that was great. And we also did an interview with Mark Purcell last week on our show, so you can look that up on our website. And I just want to thank our raffle donors because they were amazing. We decided last minute to have a raffle to cover some of our costs, and our local groups are always so supportive. Our local vegan groups came and stepped up. So we have Gray's, our local vegan restaurant, Eternal Abundance, our vegan restaurant and vegan grocery store, Elephant in the Room, our online vegan product website, website, Me and You Body, which is also vegan and local deodorants, which I'm wearing right now, and soaps, and Animal Rescue Crusade last minute donated some of their awesome bracelets. And then we here at Animal Voices and Liberation BC, we also donated stuff.
Yeah, and also we want to thank our food donors. We did end with a treat and tea reception with cupcakes donated by Fairy Cakes and Casualty Foods, and also some delicious cookies donated by our friend Bailey Morgan.
Awesome. Yeah, so I really enjoyed the film. It was my first time seeing the film, and it was a mix of different stories. It had the health aspect of veganism, some environmental aspects, and it's actually different than many of the vegan films. There's actually no graphic scenes. There's one small scene where there's these chickens being rescued, but it was very, very minor. What did you guys think of the film?
I thought it was really good. It's got no, it's very different from a lot of kind of vegan animal rights films, as it's got no graphic scenes at all. It's basically just people telling their story of how they came to the awareness of animal suffering and made the transition to veganism. So it was very interesting.
Yeah, and Mark Prichel's from Germany, so it's a German-based film, so there's subtitles for the film, and he also spent some time in the States, so there's some philosophers from the States, so you're Francione's in there, Singer's in there, and then Melanie Joy, who I've never seen speak. I've only heard of her amazing books, and I really enjoyed her part in the film.
We've had her on the show before, actually. So her book is Why We Wear Cows... Help me here. Why we eat pigs, wear cows, and
love dogs.
Yeah. Why we love dogs, eat pigs, and wear cows. There we go. I always like get them mixed up. Yeah, I'm actually just going through some of the comment cards here that we received because I have a bunch of them. I just realized that they're all positive so far. This person says, wow. They want to show the film at some place in Richmond. This person says it's a good intro to veganism. It was accessible. As a longtime vegan, I did not learn anything. However, I hope we had a lot of like non-vegans there, though. I think we did. Great and educational, very educating and brilliant. Really enjoyed it. And yeah, so some good comments there. So I really enjoyed having the film there. I think it's just another way to get people informed about, I mean, the film was touted as exploring our relationship with animals and reasons why people go vegan. That's exactly what it was about. So I think it was a really good introductory film for people to watch who don't necessarily know anything about the lifestyle. So it had people who live the vegan lifestyle, including athletes, which I thought was a really great addition there, to just show like how they go on a day-by-day basis dealing with things in their lives. And yeah, I get enough protein, and this is what my relationship with my parents are like. They don't, you know, they don't eat the same way, and then interspersed with the interviews with experts.
Yeah, and it also had the German couple who used to have farming, a dairy farm, and then they turned it into a sanctuary. So they called it a retirement home for cows.
It was
so
awesome.
It was lovely when you see people who used to be on the other side. They would, you know, there was also a chef, the chef of Portobello, the famous vegan restaurant in Portland, who, you know, told us he used to slaughter bunnies in the kitchen, and he would serve foie gras at his previous restaurant, which just shows you that people can change.
Yeah. I really enjoyed seeing how the food is made at Portobello. That is like one of the best restaurants in the country, and that was cool to see. So.
Great. And we have some news stories for you now. So the BC government has a poor handle on the population of gray wolves and whether they're being killed at a sustainable rate, according to a wolf management plan released Thursday by the Ministry of Forests, Lands, and Natural Resources Operations. The province's best estimate is that there are 8,500 wolves in BC, but concedes the true number could range as low as 5,300 or as high as 11,600. Densities are lowest in the Lower Mainland, Thompson, and Vancouver Island regions, and highest in the Peace, Ominaka, and Skeena regions. The plan further states that there is considerable uncertainty on the current take of wolves by resident hunters and trappers, as BC does not have a mandatory reporting system, and that actual kills could be substantially higher than estimated. And more hunting news. Animal rights groups heading to court over Ontario spring bear hunt. Two animal rights groups are taking the Ontario government to court in an attempt to stop a spring bear hunt pilot program before it begins, alleging it amounts to animal cruelty. Animal Alliance of Canada and Zoo Check Canada say mother bears will be killed during the hunt, leaving their orphaned cubs to starve or be killed by predators. Julie Wardier of Zoo Check Canada mentions that This is the only large game species that are hunted when the young are still dependent on their mothers, and it is inevitable that cubs will be orphaned. The animal rights groups have filed an application for judicial review and a notice of constitutional question, which are set to be heard in court on April 29th, just days before the start of the program. They hope the court will at least delay the start of the hunt until it can rule on their legal actions. Nearly 50 mayors and city councils across Northern Ontario have passed resolutions calling for their participation in the program. And Natural Resource Minister David Orazati claims that young children and their teachers are feeling threatened by the bears and having to wear bear whistles during recess at school. This hunt was canceled in 1999, and the National Resource Minister at the time, John Snowbelin, said that it had left thousands of cubs orphaned since hunters too often mistakenly shoot mother bears. The animal rights groups say the ministry's own scientists have found no link between the end of the spring bear hunt and human bear incidences. And this is an interesting quote by the Ontario Federation of Anglers and Hunters. They say they don't want big city animal rights extremists to derail the hunt. They use those exact words. And I also just want to mention, just leading off of this, because I know they're claiming that bears are so threatening. Bear attacks are actually extremely rare and are usually not fatal and are mostly human provoked or, you know, human error. And the latest statistic estimate is about 3 bear attacks in North America per year, meaning you basically are about 30 times more likely to be killed by lightning. So just to give you some perspective.
That's a good perspective, and yeah. I don't even want to know the stats on how many bears we hunt or we kill in name of conservation. But so moving on to other news in Canada, there was actually a couple undercover investigations this week from Mercy for Animals. I'll talk about the chicken one since it's Easter, and that kind of links together with eggs. But Mercy for Animals undercover investigation, the investigator worked at Horizon Poultry, which is a Maple Leaf-owned hatchery in Hanover, Ontario. The hidden camera captured horrific animal cruelty and neglect, including throwing baby chicks by their fragile wings, slamming them into metal dividers, sending them through an industrial washing machine to be scalded and drowned, and violently cramming them into masticators to be ground up alive. As we know, using a masticator to euthanize chicks is an accepted industry practice and considered humane according to industry guidelines. And we also know that this is how they euthanize baby chicks. This was in a meat facility, but where the chicks are being bred for meat, but in facilities where we're getting our egg layers, the males are of no use because they do not produce enough meat to be profitable. So then they are killed the day they're born, either by being ground up alive or suffocated. And so that's why we encourage you to go egg-free this Easter. You can buy delicious vegan dark chocolate eggs and avoid the
cruel. You had one today, didn't you?
I did, actually. Thank you.
Jackie, you'll get yours later.
Oh, nice.
I brought Easter eggs.
And they were vegan milk chocolate, so they were either rice milk or almond milk.
Yeah,
and
I didn't even check. I was just thrilled that they were vegan.
And they were absolutely amazing. And so, yeah, we encourage you to please ditch the eggs and go vegan.
Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, is a non-commercial, cooperatively owned, listener-supported community radio station.
We provide an alternative to mainstream media and offer diverse programming not heard anywhere else.
Our annual spring member drive takes place from April 4th to the 18th. Tune in at 100.5 FM or stream online at coopradio.org for special programming.
We stay on the air through the support of listeners like you.
From April 4th to the 18th, renew your membership or become a member by calling us at 604-684-7561.
For more information on this year's spring member drive, visit coopradio.org or call us at 604-684-7561.
You are listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada. So our first interview is with Tracy Martin from Rabbitron. Tracy is a rabbit rescuer, a house rabbit society educator who lives in Spokane, Washington. In an effort to stem the flow of abandoned rabbits after Easter each year, she has created a yearly campaign called Rabbitron. Tracy and her husband are vegan, and they share their home with a big family of rescued rabbits, dogs, cats, pigeons, and a couple of hens as well. Amazing. Hello, Tracy, and welcome to the show.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Thank you for being on the show. So how did you become a rabbit rescuer and advocate for bunnies?
Well, I didn't set out to be the crazy rabbit lady. I just kind of fell into that after time. I actually started out long ago with a rabbit that I did everything wrong with, and her name was Rabbitron. So I named my campaign after her, because when I had her, I didn't know anything. I had the common knowledge that other people do, to think that a rabbit belongs in a hutch, and I never got her spayed. I didn't feed her correctly. I didn't let her have time to be out and run around and be a rabbit. So after a few years went by and I got another rabbit, I learned what I didn't know at the time when I had Rabbitron. And so knowing that this is common knowledge, people think that rabbits belong in hutches and outside, I set out to do what I could to educate people so they don't make the same mistakes that I did. So I decided I would go ahead and do something about it. I'm a graphic designer, and I worked at an advertising agency. And so I had these skills that I could do my own campaign. So that's how I created the Rabbitron campaign. And this is my 10th year doing it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been a long time, but each year what I try to do is put up a few billboards, put some ads in the newspaper, do interviews, I have a website, I have a Facebook page, and just try to get the word out the best I can.
Yeah, so, I mean, for most people, they think of Easter, and they think, oh, it's the best time for bunnies, but that is not true. And why do you think people choose bunnies as a present or a gift for their children during Easter?
Well, I think it's been a tradition for some unknown reason. Bunnies and chicks and ducklings. And, of course, we know that often that's just a very bad idea. Kids, do love animals, but it takes a lot of special care, especially for a bunny. They're not a starter pet at all. These are animals that require special care, and they're very sociable, and they need time to exercise and be out and play and dig and run. Having them sit alone in a cage is like the absolute worst thing for them, just for a little kid to look at. Kids are often do not remember to feed them or take care of them. And rabbits are subtle, too. They will hide their illnesses. So often a child would not recognize an illness in a rabbit. So it's really a difficult animal to take care of for a child.
And just a question. Go ahead.
Okay. I just thought of another thing, because a reason, people will think, oh, a child loves a bunny because they're soft and they're cute. But bunnies actually don't like to be picked up very much. They're not, they'd rather you interact with them on the ground and come to them and pet them. And also, if you think about it, if you give a child a rabbit at, like, age 8, the bunny's going to live 10, 12. I have one that's 14 years old. You just think of all the changes they're going to go through. They're going to learn to drive. They're going to go to high school. All of that's going to happen during the lifespan of this rabbit. So often they just end up neglected and abandoned.
Yeah, and I also wanted to ask, I know you were talking about kids and bunnies. I also just wanted to ask, because I know kids often can be a little bit rough with animals, and perhaps a rabbit is not the best companion for that kind of situation with children.
You're absolutely right. They have really small bones. They're not going to fare well being dropped. And, I've showed kids rabbits, and sometimes their natural tendency is something that makes you cringe, but they want to touch their eyes, and, they're not always that gentle. They don't realize that they're hurting them.
And a question about this, like, do you know anything about the stats? How many rabbits end up in shelters after Easter in your area, or if you know any national stats?
You know, that's a thing that they don't really keep track of, so it's really hard. Even with my campaign, I really don't know the impact it's having other than feedback from people. But all I know is that after Easter, and you can go anywhere and in the world, basically, that gives out rabbits around Easter time, they're going to just be, you'll find rabbits just a mere days and weeks after Easter, released on the streets or dropped off in shelters. It, preferably, it would be a shelter, but the worst thing people do is just let them go, which they are, these are domesticated animals. They don't have the instincts a wild rabbit would have, so they will, it's just a death sentence for them. And often some of the cute rabbits, like, have the lop ears and stuff, they can't see a predator coming from above, so they're even, they've been bred in a way that they are not going to make it on their own.
I think that's interesting that you bring that up, how people just sort of abandon the rabbits. What I was thinking of is the town that I'm from when I was growing up. I remember once we had some people on our street had some bunnies, and they just kind of got out of their house, and they just let them live on the street. And then eventually, I guess, the bunnies just sort of disappeared because there's a lot of predators on our street. Then specifically as well, we have this area in town that's sort of on the outskirts of town that it's sort of known to be a rabbit sanctuary, except it's just a bunch of bunnies living at a campground that I don't know if anyone's really taking care of them, except there's probably campers there who are feeding them. And my dad, I just remember the story, my dad was saying how he found a bunny on our new street recently, and he took the bunny to the campground. And now you're saying that's not a good idea because that bunny didn't have the skills to, and then also I know bunnies are very territorial as well, right? So it's very possible that that bunny didn't do well.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I'm sure the rabbits would prefer to at least be out, to have, you know, not be stuck away in a hutch. But really, it's just wrong to let any animal go free like that can't handle it. You know, these are not wild rabbits. But the other reason, if you release a bunch of rabbits somewhere, and they will breed like rabbits,
yeah.
And next thing you know, there's, like, problems because they can dig under structures, they can create a lot of damage as well, and then, you know, they come in and do something awful, get rid of them, so...
Yeah, we have an area here.
Really, spay and neuter.
Yeah, we have an area where people dump in Richmond, where they dump their bunnies, and there's been overpopulation. We have a group called Rabbitats that here that has been working on that issue with the bunnies. So what should people know before adopting a bunny if they are going to do it? Because we don't want them to buy them, obviously, from the pet stores, but then all these bunnies that are left after Easter need homes. So what should people need to do if they...
There's more rabbits than there are homes, basically, but we're hoping to change that if we can at least get people to stay and neuter. But I will come on and be first to say all the things that you need to know, the warnings before you get a rabbit. But they are really, really awesome pets as well and companions for people, especially for adults. But yes, definitely adopt, don't shop. Taking a rabbit out just because they're cute or that they're a baby, you're going to get into trouble. A baby bunny goes through the same stages as a baby kitten or puppy. They will be bad. They will chew things and they will destroy things. And they will go through a very bad teenage phase. And that's usually when people decide they can't handle them. Maybe they're testing the boundaries and they're exploring their world and they're going to destroy something. But if you bunny-proof your house and give them an area in your house to live...
How much space do they need?
In your home. Oh, that's a good question. They actually need enough space to... What I did is those exercise pens from, like, a pet store. They're like usually designed for dogs or something. They fold up and then you unfold them. So they're not a cage at all. But I would say those are probably about four, I don't know, 6 feet long by 4 feet wide, an area like that. They need to be able to stand up. I mean, like, to stand up on their hind legs, and often the cage won't even allow them to do that. They need to be able to stretch out and have some room to move around. Because rabbits are really designed to run and dig, and if you take that away from them, their quality of life is gone.
And I guess, like, you're suggesting an X-Pen, but would it be more optimal, for a rabbit that, you know, that is able to live in that and that is, you know, aware of dangers, and just if you bunny-proof your home, is it optimal to have a bunny kind of more loose in the house, or loose in an area of the house, like a broom?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I have a free roaming rabbit, but I caution about that when you're not at home, because they can cause damage and chew things that you don't want them to chew. They usually go for, like, the most expensive computer cable or something like that and chew it in half, and you'll be sorry you let them out. But, no, I am a house rabbit educator, and that means, yes, I do say that, you know, the rabbit belongs in the house, and usually if you can trust them, you know, free in the house as well. But you don't want them to eat a house plant that's bad for them, and you don't want them to chew a carpet that will cause their digestion to stop or something like that. So having them have an area where it's theirs and it's safe for them, they actually appreciate that, because they are territorial and they like to have a spot where they can call their own.
And so keeping bunnies in the backyard in a cage is not a good idea. Just to reiterate that, because I think a lot of people keep them in the back, and of course there's predators. And my boyfriend actually told me a story of how they, when he lived in New Zealand, they had their bunny in the back in a cage, and the rabbit would just torment the poor bunny. So yeah,
the rabbit.
The cat. Okay. Sorry, the cat would torment.
I could see cat doing that.
Yeah,
cats can be mean.
Yeah, and there was other kind of, you know, wild animals that could come by as well. So like you said, a lot of them have been bred to not survive in the wild if they were to be.
Yes, exactly. And if they're stuck in a cage in the bath, heat will be one thing that can kill them. Heat, exhaustion, or even just fear. If a predator comes in the backyard, a raccoon or something like that, they can actually be scared to death of that. And also, we've taken in rabbits before that have their toes chewed off because a predator was underneath their cage and they had a wire bottom cage. So awful things can happen if you're not around.
Thank you for that information. You know a lot about rabbits. That's great. So how can people support your Rabbitron campaign and the work you do?
Oh, that would be great if somebody would help support it. But I accept donations. If you want to donate, I put it all towards my Rabbitron campaign, which I do every year. And you can go to Rabbitron.com for that, or visit my Facebook page, just Rabbitron. I also want people to just do their own campaign as well. If you feel strongly about rabbits, or anything else, it's not impossible to do your own advertising or campaign to get the word out. It's just a great way to send a message and something that you care about.
Great. Thank you. And your website is great. It has so much information about rabbits, how to take care of them, what to know before you adopt a rabbit. So thank you so much for all the work you do for bunnies.
Thank you, Tracy. Uh-huh.
And for more information about Rabbitron, you can go to rabbitron.com or like the Facebook page. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye. Have a great weekend.
Bye now.
Bye.
Okay.
That was a great interview. I think people also should be, like, aware of our local rescues, the Small Animal Rescue Society and Rabbitats, and support them when they can, because they definitely need that support. And even just your time as well. All right. So I'm just, again, as Cynthia mentioned earlier, it is our membership drive. So we are humbly asking our listeners, past, present, current, to please just donate, become a member. You can do, as Cynthia mentioned, a one-time donation. Basically, you can call us in or you can go to coopradio.org. The number here is 604-684-8494. And please remember to mention Animal Voices when you're making your donation. All right, and we have some great events coming up. We have the weekly chicken vigils that happen outside the slaughterhouse at the corner of Commercial and Hastings. And we also have weekly fur demos outside of Brooklyn Clothing, and that is from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. And that takes place on the corner of Davy and Homer, meeting at the Blends coffee shop on the corner there, and then moving over to Brooklyn to just tell them to please stop selling fur, and just to, you know, continue to ask them to take the fur off the shelves. It's been a long one, but Vancouver Animal Defense League is still continuing this campaign, and they will until the fur is off the shelf. And Co-op Radio is proud to support this year's Earth Day celebration, hosted by Youth for Climate Justice Now. The event starts at 11 a.m. with a march from Commercial Drive and Broadway Avenue to Grandview Park for the festival. Co-op Radio will have an outreach table at the festival. And for more information on this or the Earth Day event, please check out earthdayparade.ca. And then also this Saturday, there is the Chipotle demo, which is Saturday at 6 p.m. UBC Activists for Animals will hold its monthly protest against Chipotle, in part with the international campaigns with a group called Direct Action Everywhere. These protests are meant to disrupt many places that normalize the consumption of animal flesh, secretions, and parts. It's especially directed against businesses that profit off the lie of humane meat. Activists will meet at 6 p.m. at Robson Square downtown to go over the plan before entering Chipotle. The entire event will be filmed, so please be aware of this in case you wish to not be on video. Cynthia, you've been at this before. Do you have any?
Yeah, I think it's a great protest. The thing I love about it is that there's protests all over the world. Even I heard India and in Europe, even when there's no Chipotles, they're protesting anywhere where food is violence. And I love this idea of unity. We've had show before about unity in the animal rights movement, but all of us working together and doing campaigns across the globe is a really united front. And that's one thing I love about Direct Action Everywhere is that they've really reached out across the world to different groups. And I heard India's joining, so that was really exciting for me.
I might go tomorrow.
Yeah, you should totally come.
It might fit into my schedule, so.
Yeah, it's really good because I like that as well. And the filming aspect, it's really powerful because you can reach so many more people than you would actually reach if you were just going to the event.
I hope those films are getting a lot of views on YouTube for sure. I know I've been sharing them.
They're beautifully done. Yeah, so you can go to Direct Action Everywhere and check out. They do a compilation of all the protests all across the world, and you can see signs in all different languages, but yet the message is the same and the message is clear that it's not food, it's violence.
Yes. And another event I just heard about is Stop UBC Animal Research and ADAV, which is an anti-vivisection group, is going to be holding a leafleting event outside the Vancouver Art Gallery on Robson Street steps, close to the Robson campus of UBC, on Thursday, April 24th, and that's from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And they are also going to be planning a candlelight vigil at a different location starting at 7:30 that night. So for more information on that or to get involved, please contact adavsociety@gmail.com. If you can attend one or both events, or if you'd just like to learn more about this. And that is for World Week for Animals and Laboratories, which is April 20th to the 26th.
That's great, which is next week. So you're listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in the downtown east side in unceded Coast Salish territories. So it's Earth Day next week, so our feature interview is with Will Anderson, who is the author of This Is Hope, Green Vegans and the New Human Ecology. So hello, Will, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Thanks for being on. So your book is great. I haven't had time to read the whole thing, but I'm hoping you'll tell our viewers about it. And I'm excited to, I just got a hold of it, so I'm going to read the rest of it. So can you just first tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got involved in environmentalism and veganism, or the connection between both that you found for yourself?
You know, I thought about that at one point, and I can remember in Spokane, Washington, 1969, in which supermarkets were in opposition to recycling soda bottles, and by having a 5% deposit fee placed on them. And I went in and I simply calculated all the costs and benefits and wrote an article about it. And from then on, I dabbled in environmental issues for quite some time. While at the same time, it was almost simultaneous in that I started changing my diet as well and becoming vegetarian in about 1969, I think it was. Slowly worked my way into it, and there wasn't much information in those days. I was in the Air Force teaching survival, and I took a lot of lessons away from that about our relationships with other individuals from other species and our ecosystems.
Wow.
So the two sort of grew up together.
Yeah, I find that for myself as well. I was more, you know, I was vegetarian and then vegan, and from my veganism, I've gotten more involved with environmentalism from my veganism. That's why I really relate to your book. I feel the connection between both. Can you explain, for those of us who don't know some of the terminology, what is human ecology and what you mean by the new human ecology?
Well, human ecology is a field of study, and it's a study of the relationships we create as a species, as individuals, as cultures and nations. It's the set of relationships we create with our behavior, with our external environment. So the experiments that we make in our lives, as we explore ways to make value-based decisions, they have real consequences, both for ecosystems, other people, and individuals from other species. So, I know it's a study of these relationships. The way I use them is that the field of human ecology, from my perspective, gives us the broadest perspective, the greatest whole of how veganism fits into the entirety of human behavior. And that entirety is important because there are relationships between a lot of issues. Veganism is a subset of human ecology, and it sits alongside other very important ways of living, decisions that we make that either weaken veganism or increase strength. And in the same way, veganism increases the strength of other issues that we care about, such as ecosystems and the sustainable use of resources, social and economic justice, and limits to growth, things like that, things that will have at least a promise that we have a future to look forward to.
So I read, I just started to read your book, and this part really was really interesting to me. So you prefer to use species rights as opposed to animal rights. Why do you make that distinction?
Well, you know, I was searching for a phrase that would go beyond animal rights and would help us include not just the animal rights focus that has been, and rightly so in many regards, that's focused so much on animal agriculture, because we cannot forget for a moment all those species in the wild. Not only the sentient species out there, but also the species upon which sentient species depend upon. Say, for instance, phytoplankton in the ocean. If we don't care about those, when we look at the food chain, if we don't have the phytoplankton, or on land, just the plants, all of the species above them who feed on them in the food chain will suffer, will starve, and they'll die. And so if we're going to really address suffering on the biggest scale imaginable, to be all-inclusive, animal rights, for me, just became insufficient. And so I'm putting forth this idea of species rights, because every species has a right to exist and to flourish alongside us. And you know, so I oftentimes put in parentheses domestic and wild, just to clarify them. But species rights to me leaves the door open for us to understand that sentience is a circle of inclusion that's expanding. The more we do research in the wild, non-invasive research by studying animal behavior, we're understanding that sentience is including more and more species as we go along. And it's just our limited understanding that is keeping us from really understanding that species rights is a bigger club than we ever imagined.
That's really interesting. So you talk about in your book being a green vegan and the seven results. Can you explain those to us?
Well, that's where we get into the core of the issue, at least the proposal. You know, if we can understand how veganism fits into a much larger vision, a future where it enables the end of human poverty, makes sustainability a realistic goal, contributes to economic and social justice, reduces the loss of biodiversity and healthy ecosystems, and ends most suffering caused by human behaviors against individuals from other species. When we understand those relationships, then veganism's power to transform the world will become self-evident. Because veganism, it's more than what we choose to eat. It's a value system based on empathy, nonviolence, compassion, justice, as well as our own self-interest. So whether or not we recognize it at first, becoming a vegan puts us in a really unique position to address a multitude of global problems, problems that can be resolved by the same value system that brought us to veganism in the first place. And since veganism doesn't exist in isolation of all the rest of human behavior, we can best understand its connections by turning to this field of human ecology, the science and those relationships with our external environment. If we take a look, for instance, between the steady state economic systems, or at least economic systems that recognize the true value of ecosystems, and we can protect ecosystems. And when we protect ecosystems, we are also creating social and economic justice for people. And when we create social and economic justice for people, we can start addressing the fact that education and rights to land ownership and political expression, the freedom of expressing yourself, that sets the stage for a lower human population, which is essential if we're ever going to become sustainable in the truest sense.
You talk about lower human population in your book, which I found an interesting topic that some vegans, you know, you meet. A lot of vegans I know actually don't have children or don't plan to have children. I think that they see that the overpopulation of not just, humans, animals, but also humans that could be adopted as opposed to us, you know, procreating to have more humans on the earth.
Yes, we're adding about 220,000 people, a net addition, every day to the planet. And that isn't sustainable by anybody's measure. And yet we are afraid, at least, you know, as we see it in mainstream environmental groups and others, for the most part, they're afraid to address the lower human population issue, that we must have fewer people on the planet through natural attrition. In other words, fewer births. And without lower human population, how do we ever expect to have a vegan world? Does anybody expect that we're recruiting 220,000 people every day to veganism? So I'm glad to hear, because I'm finding the same thing when I talk to people. And many of them, straight-edge vegans, especially that I've talked to, who... are really dedicated and very clear about where they stand on the issues and what they're willing to do to create a world that's kinder, and more sustainable. And, you know, it gives me really good help, you know, a really good boost of hope. My hat's off to them.
Yeah, and I also want to mention on the same note, too, that it's not solely overpopulation, because certainly other countries that are perhaps less privileged than we are here in North America, you know, maybe they have bigger families, but they're probably not consuming as much as we are here. So I think it's just, you know, the privileged aspect of that as well, the privileged consumption that we have in North America.
Right. You know, we've spent a lot of time in international politics pointing the fingers at greenhouse gas reductions, which they're pointing out with all true correctness, that most of the greenhouse gases in the atmosphere are from the first world countries, such as ours, who have benefited materially while wreaking havoc on the environment. And now we're expecting them to cut back on their emissions. So, you know, my stance is that we've got to do it all. We have to recognize that population, no matter where it is, when it starts exceeding ecosystem capacity, it's unsustainable for wealthy or poor people. And yet, unless the wealthier countries, the ones who have taken most, oftentimes from the countries who are impoverished, you know, the colonial histories, are pretty horrific in retrospect, and very horrific within it. When we understand that unless we invest in social and economic justice for all people, unless we start sharing the wealth that we have and support their decisions to create a more sustainable environment, to give them the tools, the seeds, and the technology so that when they decide to make their food choices, when they decide to, however they vote, make decisions in their cultures and societies, that we are there not to tell them what to do, but to show by example what we've done. And so we have to first look at ourselves, and we have to take a look at the decisions and relationships we are creating with our human ecology. And only then can we, you know, be honest about, you know, what we're trying to say and what we're asking of them. They don't have the social safety net like we have. They don't have the infrastructure to get their goods to the market, so to speak. And at the same time, they are competing, say, with animal agriculture for the grains of the world. Animal agriculture is able to spend far much more money on the basic food commodities to feed cattle and chickens and pigs and all that than the poor can afford. Mm-hmm. And to top all that off, you know, I'll wind this up, but to top all that off, the climate change that has been created by the greenhouse gases that we have created by and large, you know, even though slash and burn agriculture is a really important contributor, for instance, but by and large, we have created these greenhouse gases, which is directly tied to global climate change. And that is affecting food crop production. And the poorest countries are suffering the worst already. And, you know, we have to atone for these things, and we have to recognize them and do more.
So why do you think so many environmentalists are not vegan?
Oh, you know, that's a great heartache, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I think some of the more progressive environmentalists get it, but the mainstream environmentalists, I think, are comfortable with the Michael Pollan type of take on animal agriculture that, you know, if we just go small scale, or if we just cut back on meat consumption, everything will be fine. You know, it's the easy lullaby and lie that they are most conveniently taking in, I think, in large part because it's the culture of each environmental organization. Every organization has their own group culture, and that culture is influenced by the donor base. Hmm. So, you know, if they're oftentimes held in check by the donor base, they're afraid to bring out policies that are more progressive, even if they believe in themselves. But, you know, it's still a mystery to me why mainstream organizations have not stood up. The Center for Biological Diversity is an exception. They are looking at population, and they're looking at diet straight in the face. Earth Island Institute isn't all that far behind them. They have it in theory, but not in practice yet. It's just an organization I respect deeply. But if you go to the websites of major environmental organizations like Greenpeace, for whom I used to work for, and good people, but they don't get it yet. Or if they get it, they're not showing it in the websites or in their policies or in their campaigns. And it's, I go to the International Learning Commission meetings, and I go to various conferences, have been over my life, and it's always a deep and painful disappointment that they don't get it. They don't get the connection between some of the issues and saving wildlife and ecosystems.
Yeah, it's. I'm always shocked too. I work in a holistic environment, holistic health environment, and there's this happy meat sustainability myth that somehow we can feed everybody can still eat their animals and in a sustainable, happy way, which it shocks me all the time. That first of all, our population is too large. Nobody ever mentions that part. I, of course, don't think we should eat animals, but it's just shocking to me that people don't. It's almost like they're not thinking it through. I'm not an environmentalist, but it doesn't make sense to me that we would be able to even feed everybody on this earth with this happy meat myth.
Not thinking it through is a common thread, I think, Cynthia.
I agree wholeheartedly. I think there's a really deep corruption, a rotting within the species rights, or if you will, animal rights movement. And a lot of people know this and see this and are heartsick over it, in which animal rights organizations feel it and take a dual track, as it's been called, of reducing suffering on farms while making it more acceptable and making animal agriculture even stronger by creating a more commercial market niche. For me, I'll be making animal agriculture stronger or weaker. And there are outright subsidies by some organizations to animal agriculturalists who are making a few greenwashing, mainwashing, sustainable washing improvements, but at the core, the rot remains. And the some of the largest, most respected organizations in the world, especially in the U.S., are buying into this humane meat lie. And if anybody wants to see the history of this and how it happened, humanemyth.org is the place to go.
That's a great website. We're always trying to promote that website. It's got good information on it. So for, some of our viewers, we have a mix of viewers, sure. But a lot of them are vegan. So for people who are vegan, do you have any tips? Earth Day is coming, some changes they can start to make to be more environmentally conscious. They're already vegan. What more can they do?
I think people will have different opportunities as economics and their situation will allow. It's everything from rechecking, even if you're renting, rechecking your shower head to see if they're low flow, and there's a wand on them, which you can just turn the water off and remove your shower. Rechecking to see that your diets are eliminating all forms of animal agricultural products, and that includes leather, all the things that would support a not sustainable, terribly horrific and industries that are wreaking havoc with both ecosystems and people's lives and their health. So it's, first of all, if you're not convinced yet about having children or not having children, start reading about what the environmental impact of each child is. We have this really terrible conundrum in which we see the joy and the value and the self-identity of having a child and the real consequences. If everybody had one child, on average, every fertile woman, as they measure things, had one child in the world. By 2050, global, if I'm thinking correctly here, global greenhouse gases would decline, I think, by 49%. instead of 2050 or 2100, but the consequence of it having children. Looking at our e-commandment system, understanding, going to the website of the Center for the Advancement of Steady State Economies, which sounds very, you know, highbrow, but it's essentially an economy that recognizes the value of individuals from the species as well as ecosystem. It supports them instead of exploits them. And of course, veganism.
Veganism, yes. Thank you so much. We're actually out of time, but I recommend everybody to get a copy of your book. I love how you end the book with hope. Like, you have hope, and you talk about how, you know, there is some kind of doom and gloom in this and what's happening, but we are the hope, and we can make a change. And Jackie's wearing a bracelet right now that says hope on it. We should take a photo and post it on our Facebook page. Thank you so much for being on the show. For more information and to purchase this great book, you can visit greenvegans.org. Thanks so much, Will, for being on our show today. Have a great long weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. This has been the Easter and Earth Day show today. So please join us for next week's show. It's going to be a surprise. We here at the Animal Voices show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show. We really do enjoy getting feedback about the show, and especially suggestions of interviews or subject matter that you'd like to have on the show. We really appreciate that. You can also email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, and please do check out our website, animalvoices.org, where all of our shows can be downloaded from. Also, just a reminder, it's the last day of our spring membership drive, and we still need to reach our goal. We have to raise $1,000 to keep the show on the air, and we're not quite there yet. So if you appreciate the work that we do here every week at Animal Voices to bring you original quality programming on the topics of current animal issues and the vegan lifestyle, please do show us your support by making a donation to us at Animal Voices at Co-op Radio. Like I said, we do rely on your donations to keep the show on the air. You can make a donation as small as you want. I know last week on the show, Alyssa and Tim were talking about sustaining memberships, where you can just have a small amount taken out of your bank account or credit card every month. That's what I do. I know that's what Alyssa and Tim does, and you don't even feel it. We get $5 taken out of our account every week, and or every month, I should say, and it comes to $60 a year, and then you get a tax receipt. If you want to just do a one-time donation as well, that's totally, totally doable. $5, $10, $20, $100, whatever you can afford. So you can do that by giving us a call right now. We'll be here for another half hour at least, 604-684-8494. Or if you don't want to talk on the phone, you can also go on the website, coopradio.org. It's spelled coopradio.org. Click on Donate to Co-op Radio, and remember to indicate on your donation that it's going towards Animal Voices, and that'll go towards getting our keeping our show on the air. So please, please do donate if you can. Every little bit helps, really. We're closing the show now. This song is called Earth Song. It's by Michael Jackson for Earth Day. Stay tuned now for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.